Yeah, it is 21 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from... David's here, too. David, we haven't introduced you yet today. You were missing. You were...
Here I am.
You were AWOL. David's here. And Don Clark from Garden Valley, Texas. Don, a biochemist and member of the Board of Creation Moments. And hot, still hot and dry there in Garden Valley, Texas, huh?
Still hot and dry. Not as hot as it was. It's in the 90s instead of 100s.
Mm-hmm. The grapes are suffering,
but,
though.
Yeah, it was supposed to rain yesterday. It didn't rain. It's supposed to rain today, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. Right, we definitely need rain. It's quite warm.
Don joins us just virtually every Tuesday morning. In fact, he's accumulated a rather extensive library of podcasts on the website at brokenroadradio.com. And we talk about creation and evolution and science and faith and how they interact and how they don't. And somehow they seem worlds apart sometimes when in fact, in truth, science, well, should be that, should be right in the middle. And it should be simply a means of exploring and organizing information and it should match up with historical. You mentioned historical science last week. Can you define that for us?
Well, it's something that, obviously isn't necessarily happening right now. It happened in the past, for example, the creation of the world or the origins of man. And so we weren't present when it happened to observe how it was done. And so we must make assumptions as to, how events took place. And the science behind it in order to try to explain it. So historical science is not, provable science. It's not repeatable in the sense that, the Earth was formed once. We can't repeat that experiment and prove that our theories are correct or incorrect. So therefore, it's just an attempt to try to explain the past with some of the knowledge that we have today.
So that would contrast with, would you call it experimental science, where you actually have, you develop a theory. In other words, you observe what's happening in the environment now in today's world, and you make some, maybe it starts with an assumption, doesn't it?
Yeah, that starts with an assumption too, but at least you can test a hypothesis. So you come up with a guess and say, this is the reason when I drop a ball off a high tower, it falls to the ground, and this is the speed at which it's going to fall. And then, you put in some numbers and you do your calculations and you say, aha, yes, I was right. Or, no, I got to correct my assumptions here. So it's observable, it's repeatable. You can do the experiment. Many labs can do the experiment. Many, folks can do the experiment and either corroborate your particular hypothesis or say that now it needs to be tweaked a little bit and here's our little tweaking. And so you get people sort of collaborating with each other. Or, discussing that, maybe there's a different explanation with the same result. But, so that's observable science. That's something that we can feel and touch today, whereas historical science, you really can't do that.
Still, there are assumptions involved in both, and that suggests that logic is an important tool, and I'm not sure that you can just create logic. I mean, there are different approaches to and modes of thinking. If let's say you were walking in the Grand Canyon, and you were down there by the Colorado River, and you looked up the cliff face, and there's a cave. Now, it being the Grand Canyon, it's probably already been explored, but hey, it's something of interest. So you walk up and you go in this cave, and you have a flashlight, and you go toward the back, and you happen to be running that flashlight over the wall, and you notice some paintings and some carvings and things. What would you assume? What would logic? Let's say it was a picture of a buffalo, but an American bison on the wall there. Would you assume first that whoever did this made up this creature, or perhaps that he lived with the creature?
Well, that's a yes, of course. You would assume that the person or the people who made those carvings or paintings obviously saw the animal that they were drawing, that's you ran us right into the topic for today.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
So, yes, obviously you would assume that, okay, these animals had to be around at the time the person was drawing these things. You might find a creature in there, for example, that may not be in existence today, or may be so rare that you would say, well, how is that possible that particular, you know, animal is depicted here? And so we actually have an article in the Institute of Creation Research that talks about such a thing. And this, it's an engraving in a piece of brass that is in a cathedral in England. And it's it's at the
Carlisle Cathedral in the UK.
Oh, Carlisle. Yeah, the Carlisle Cathedral, a very old church in northern England. And it's got pictures of many of the, you know, medieval carvings from this church that look like dinosaurs. And so this article describes, what this particular plate or these images look like. And if you look at them carefully, there is absolutely no doubt that these are pictures of dinosaurs, and in particular, you know, a sauropod. Sauropods, we think that they lived in swampy areas, and of course, as England was populated, they drained the swamps in order to have land to grow things and to have their sheep and herds and stuff. And so the dinosaurs obviously passed away over, or dissipated or disappeared over a period of time. Now, on other plates in this church, there are pictures of birds and other things that we recognize, and we would certainly say, oh, well, obviously, whoever did these carvings, or these engravings, saw that those particular animals, and we can identify that particular bird, and so therefore, this other thing, I'm not sure what that is, and we don't want to call it a dinosaur, because if you call it a dinosaur, then you would have to come to the conclusion, as we started off the discussion, that man lived with dinosaurs. And that poses a problem for the evolutionary thinking, at least, because dinosaurs supposedly, you know, died off millions and millions of years before man even came into existence. So how could you have a carving, especially a carving in a church, that depicts two dinosaurs? It looks like they are in battle with one another, with their necks kind of entangled with one another, and one of the dinosaurs actually has spikes on its tail that we have discovered from other locations, that a Spinophorosaurus, has exactly the same spikes in exactly the same, you know, the direction and everything. And so this had to be observed by the person or the people that were doing these carvings.
But this was the 15th century, the mid to late 1400s, when these engravings were done. And
we've got another problem.
Yeah.
Why are they, you know, that wasn't that long ago, was it?
Well, David remembers that time.
Well, I bet he does. Yeah. I mean, well, he can remember way, way back. Mm-hmm.
It did happen when I was a very young person.
That's true. Yeah.
And memories are thin and dim, but yeah, okay.
Okay, so, we exaggerate to make a point here. It's the assumption is that, well, it's that assumption that of course dinosaurs and preceded man on the earth. It's that assumption that prevents people from seeing the obvious truth here.
Well, it is, and you know, some people, or at least some folks, have tried to call these things crocodiles. Well, there's a number of problems with that. One, the legs on the pictograph is quite long and not shooting.
They don't look anything like crocodiles. By the way, if you're listening this morning, you'd like to see these pictures. There's a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. Click on that, and you can see the same article that we're discussing here. Sorry for the interruption, Don. I wanted to point that out.
Oh, sure, you know, so obviously it's not a crocodile, and obviously it's not any other animal that one would suppose would have been around back then. So why don't we just admit, okay, these are indeed pictographs of a dinosaur, and that man was living with dinosaurs, you know, back in the 1500s, obviously, and probably even later than that. We have, you know, the knights going out and all kinds of, you know, stories in England of knights going out and slaying dragons. Why is that so difficult to, you know, to believe? I mean, it's not, legends do have some basis in truth. You know, sometimes the best legends are those that are based on obvious truth, and maybe there were some gallant knights out there that were going around, you know, that were dragon slayers and kind of ridding the land of these, you know, creatures.
Flying dinosaurs, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and so we have tales of these fire-breathing dragons. Now, I don't believe these sauropods are fire-breathing, but we have historical evidence or recording that dinosaurs actually lived with man, and so if we go back, to the Bible, as both, you know, obviously it teaches spiritual truths, but it is a historical record, as I've said many, many times on this program. And so in this case, if you go to Job chapter 40, and Job being the oldest book in the Bible, we often think that, well, Genesis is the oldest book. Well, no, Job lived before Moses, and so Job is the oldest book, and God's having a conversation with Job, and he's saying, consider the behemoth, and he starts, God then describes the behemoth with a tail as big as a cedar, other things about the behemoth with its sinews and its big muscles and its legs and things, and you look at you read the description and you think in your mind, well, I've seen this before, and it sounds like a sauropod. It sounds like one of these creatures that is in the engraving. And so here you have historical documentation that man not only lived with the dinosaurs, but God used the dinosaurs as an example to man that, I've done all of these things, God says, and who are you to think that you could do anything like this? Mm-hmm. And then in chapter 41, certainly we think to ourselves, there couldn't be any fire-breathing dinosaurs. Well, if you go to Job chapter 41, you come across the Leviathan, and the Leviathan, which lives in the water, has this ability to breathe fire. And so God says, can you do this? And you know, Job obviously doesn't answer, but the answer is, no, I can't. You know, you're a great God, and I can't do any of this. And you know, so God is dealing with Job. Even though he was a godly man, there was an area of his life where, because of all of his success in the past, which God allowed Satan, by the way, to wipe away, which is another story, but God allowed him to accumulate, you know, the things that he had, took it all away from him, allowed the Satan then to take it all away, and then says, hey, you know, you got an issue here, which is pride. And so Job humbles himself, and then, of course, God rewards that by doubling everything that he had before. But the point being that in Job chapters 40 and 41, we've got two descriptions of two distinct dinosaurs. One of them, the behemoth, which we believe is a sauropod, you know, like a creature. The other one, a leviathan, which was a fire-breathing dragon. Interestingly enough, we're finding either written evidence of the fire-breathing dragon in legends in England, and, of course, this engraving that we're talking about today being, you know, recorded for us in England as well. So,
well, I can see, you know, speaking to breathing fire, I can see man in his literature and stories and legends exaggerating the prowess, the strengths, the fearsomeness of these creatures they were contending with. But it's still a stronger suggestion that they really coexisted than they didn't. We can't allocate all these pictures and drawings and writings to man's wild imagination. I mean, there was no way to transmit the knowledge of these from millions of years ago, and I'm not sure when does traditional science say the dinosaurs disappeared? Was it 65 million, something like that, years ago?
I believe so.
Yeah,
65 million. The 200 million to 65 million, the dinosaurs roamed the earth. Well, you know, we have evidence here that, maybe that's not quite accurate because, you know, this was 1500s and, you know, we've got evidence that dinosaurs lived with man. Mm-hmm. And then man, of course, came much, much, much later, according to evolutionary theory. So, or hypothesis or guess.
Yeah.
The evidence, therefore, points to this type of evidence then points to that. Oh, that particular hypothesis is incorrect, because here we have dinosaurs living with man, and they lived alongside of man, and obviously man has wiped them out since that time, either by wiping out their environment, in the case of the sauropods, and draining the swamps in England and in other places where man then spread across the land, or actually physically killing them, you know, with their swords or whatever, as described by the knights in their legend.
This article talks about a 2009 discovery of a rare sauropod in the Republic of Niger. I'm not sure Niger is the way I want to say it, in Africa. Archaeologists and paleontologists are finding out new stuff all the time, finding things in places they haven't looked yet. You suppose it's possible they're still out there somewhere? I mean, the dinosaurs?
Well, I think they are. And, you know, they're in isolated places, obviously. You know, we got the story of the Loch Ness monster, who could be a leviathan-like creature, certainly a swimming, you know, a swimming dinosaur, and it can live deep into the Loch, if you will. So you don't see it very often, but I believe that there are still these creatures around, because obviously they didn't. We have evidence that they lived not that long ago.
You know, it's almost like we would like to believe they're still around because of recent fictional accounts like Jurassic Park, the movie, and like a Mysterious Island, and all the science fiction movies of the 50s and 60s, particularly after the atomic bomb was invented and radiation was a factor, and people were speculating on how it changes genes and creates mutants of various kinds. But it's almost like in the human imagination we miss these creatures. That says something to me too.
Yes, there's definitely a fascination with the dinosaurs. Even little kids, these little dinosaurs that they play with, and we have stuffed dinosaurs, and it's like we want to touch them. We want to go up to them. They're so awesome, They're mm-hmm. so big. It makes us think. It actually, helps us to bring our life into perspective. It's almost like, man, if we saw one of these in real life, it's like going up to an elephant, but 10 times the size, if not more,
mm-hmm.
and say, wow. I mean, why do we go to the zoo and look at the elephants and say, wow, those are amazing creatures? To think that the dinosaurs were much, much bigger than these guys, than the elephants. And as God described to Job, it puts things in perspective, for us. I think, and so not having them visibly around to remind us as to who God is and that He is an awesome creator and created awesome things, both big and small, that who are we to think that we are God
mm-hmm.
or that we can do anything without Him? I think there is a yearning within each of us, especially us guys, that we would play with the dinosaurs in the sand and in the dirt and have them fight each other and things like that, and to just be amazed by these type of creatures.
And who are we to overestimate ourselves and make assumptions that don't stand up to pure logic? When you look at the historical scientific record, and the existence of the coexistence of man with dinosaurs is a very real possibility, and these cave drawings kind of suggest that, well, maybe there's more to this than we. It has to do with being humble, I think, and then there's understanding our place in the creation, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and like I said, in Job. That's pretty much what the book of Job is about, humility and knowing our place in God's wonderful creation. And so being able to accept that we are not on the top of the food chain necessarily, and that we do need to answer to a God, a loving God, by the way. This is not a God of anger. This is a loving God who wants to have a personal relationship with us, and He does all that He can to with the past evidence of all the bones that we've found, the dinosaur bones, and these type of things. That I created a wonderful, beautiful land for you to reside in. I created a beautiful garden, and you chose to follow the enemy of our souls, and so that land was contaminated, and then God had to descend the great flood, which a lot of the evidence that we have for dinosaurs actually come from the great burial that took place, and the great kind of recreation of the surface of the earth that took place at the time of the flood. And we still have people today, with all of the evidence that we have, that this that there was a great flood that was global and not just local, that would say, oh, the flood didn't even exist. But, you know, there's all kinds of evidence for the flood and for a global flood, not the least of which is the dinosaur bones that we find today.
And it still pains me to think that science and all of us collectively can look at the evidence and say 2 and 2 really isn't 4, is it? It's something else. Let's recompute here. Yeah. Dr. Don Clark, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com. And there you will find a great body of library archives of scientific information that supports the biblical creation. You might want to pay them a visit, creationmoments.com. You can link to it from the Roken Road site. Don, grateful to you as always for joining us, and we'll look forward to next Tuesday. Okay?
Okay, very good. And you folks have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, you too, Don.
So long.